Today could be any day, anywhere. And yet the same underlying principles relate to each moment, anytime, anywhere. That there's a reality that we can begin to connect with, an actuality present in the awareness of this body. We can, at any moment, under all circumstances, without exception, choose to enter into the awareness, the sensory awareness of this body. Anytime, anywhere. And the unique opportunity on this retreat, on a retreat, is to continue to incline the mind, navigate, offer, surrender, remember, to return, and to establish this foundational awareness. For as a result, there's a quality of awakened consciousness present in our lives for this moment. But like a candle that has not yet been lit by a match, it remains dormant unless that igniting aspect, attention, is sustained in the returning, in the moment of return. Mindfulness arises. Mindfulness is the active agent of awareness. Awareness then arises. And then there is a degree of clear seeing. But if there is not sustained attention, then this cause which brings about the effect of awareness is not sustained, and the mind just lapses back into its old habitual view of the world, engages its perceptual experience of things devoid of mindfulness, and begins to process accordingly. So simple to return, so simple to embody, so simple to bring one's attention fully, fully into this moment. But without an object, then effectively there is no candle to light. So we've been working with the object that we access through the awareness of this body and the discovery of the movements and sensations arising and passing with these movements of breathing. We've learned, we're learning a great deal about that simple distinction, and yet complex, but simple distinction between the cultivation of mindfulness in terms of our application of attention and the thinking process, which draws our attention into a proliferation of associations born of memory, where there's no other possibility other than to live in memory, conscious or unconscious, barely conscious, and to project the fantasy of future. We're learning the distinction between living in a mindful awareness born of a choice that we make in each moment, and the experience of thinking. However pleasant, unpleasant it might be. We've also engaged the object of concentration, metta. Metta bhavana, the cultivation of metta, the mind liberating quality of metta. We've also, for some, engaged karuna, compassion. Karuna bhavana, the cultivation of karuna. And mudita bhavana, the cultivation of mudita. And upeka bhavana, the cultivation of equanimity. Whatever you have chosen as an object throughout this retreat, please join me in these moments in the equanimity cultivation. The phrases associated with the equanimity cultivation, actually the phrase, is I am the owner, phrases, I am the owner of my karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise with my actions and not outside causes. I am the owner of my karma. My happiness and unhappiness arise with my actions and not outside causes. I am the owner of my karma. My happiness and unhappiness arise with my actions and not outside causes. And again, if possible, knowing the distinction between thinking and the cultivation of mindfulness through the equanimity practice, empowering, awakening the quality of equanimity. Returning again. If the object is not clear, then make the adjustment that allows for it to be more precisely clear. Just experiment with what it might take. A sense of just composing the mind, remembering one's intention perhaps, inviting the words that make up the phrases one by one. It takes a certain humility as well as interest. Or else it's just kind of a shot in the dark, dissolving away like a falling star. Direct, clear, intentional, precise, sustained application of mindfulness. Returning. If the sense of self arises, so compelling, and begins to talk and say, this is difficult, I like it, I don't like it. Oh, this is powerful, this is good. I'm going to do this. Or, yes, when I get home, create a picture. Just note thinking and return to the actual cultivation. I am the owner of my karma. My happiness and unhappiness arise with my actions and not outside causes. Becomes then the basis to now invite a neutral person. This truth exists as an aspect of lawfulness, an aspect of Dharma. And therefore is true and applicable with all beings. Inviting a neutral person with whom you share the upekkha. You are the owner of your karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions and not outside causes. You are the owner of your karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions and not outside forces or causes. here in the middleness with this truth and this conveyance with a neutral person. Register within the phrase that one's happiness and unhappiness arise, not just unhappiness, from one's actions and not outside causes. Allow them to be equal in the way that they are cultivated. Equal energy, equal attention. And now, a dear one, balance is the essence of equanimity. This is neutral information that exists deep within us at the level of insight, at that level of intuitive knowing. And to the degree to which this intuitive awareness associated with this truth has arisen within us, then to the degree to which there is a poise, a composure, and a sense of a pleasant awareness, lightly pleasant, in its alignment, in its nature. So just maintaining this balance while sharing this truth with a dear one, cultivating upekkha with a dear one. You are the owner of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness, in truth, your happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions. And not outside causes. Choosing with one with whom it is possible to cultivate rather than one where one keeps kind of tumbling into some preoccupation. Dear one, you are the owner of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions. And not outside causes. This is not negative information. This is just inherent to the nature of being. You are the owner of your karma. And now, one who's difficult for you. With the same balance, perhaps tenderness, clarity. Continue with the cultivation of equanimity. You are the owner of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions. Your happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions and not outside causes. Returning. And now all female and all male beings, you are the owners of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness rise with your actions and not outside causes. All those that are near to you and all those that are far. You are the owners of your karma. All those that are young, all in middle years, all in the elder years of life. You are the owners of your karma. All who have been born and all who've not yet been born. You are the owners of your karma. All who are experiencing happiness in this moment, as well as those who are unhappy in this moment, you are the owners of your karma. All humans, all creatures, you are the owners of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions and not outside causes. all creatures that live within the earth. You are the owners of your karma. All beings of the air, you are the owners of your karma. All beings that live within water, you are the owners of your karma. I may not be able to understand it. I certainly cannot change it. You are the owners of your karma. All beings in existence in front of you, near and far, you are the owners of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions and not outside causes. All beings to the right of you, near and far, you are the owners of your karma. All beings in existence behind you, you are the owners of your karma. All beings in existence to the left of you, where you sit, near and far, you are the owners of your karma. All beings above you, near and far, you are the owners of your karma. All beings in existence below you, you are the owners of your karma. And with the sense of those that are in proximity and those that are at distances, again, just opening to that sense of the universal space that we share, in which we all exist. The infinite expanse in which existence takes so many different forms and fulfills so many dimensions of its karma. And then the one present here, cultivating this noble and wise quality. Feel the breath that is arising. We're falling in this moment. The natural organic process of this body breathing, a mechanistic process that's occurring in each moment, realizing that this is karma, causes and effects at work. Sometimes, in mindfulness, the cause of calm. I am the owner of my karma. In every action, every arising of that within the realm of thought, every moment of thinking, only I can be present to this process. I am the owner of what arises through speech. Only I can be present to this process of speech and conveyance of information and communication through speech. Only I can be in awareness with what arises in the body. The varying energy states, the impulses, that which moves and leads to expression, deeds, conduct. So to the degree to which this is true to you, continue with the upekkha phrases for a moment or two. I am the owner of my karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise with my actions and not outside causes. Accordingly, you with whom I share this life, this existence, you are the owners of your karma. Your happiness and unhappiness arise with your actions and not outside causes. As well, the collective karma that we share. We are the owners of our karma. Our happiness and unhappiness arise through our actions and not outside causes. As well, all beings are the owners of their karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise with their actions and not outside causes. perhaps you have moments where there's a sense of the maturation of compassion that occurs through equanimity. For even in the moment of breaking down the barriers with different categories of being, even though something arises to argue, this cannot be so. I mean, it's the oil slicks, and it's the this, and this poor creature, and this child, and yet the engendering of that sense of compassion that each being does have its own karma. We can't perceive it, let's say, beneath the skin. We can't look into another person's or being's perception, quality of perception, and what's actually being experienced. And the truth is that based on our own conditioning, there's a lot of projection going on. And it's not really true to know another's experience. Not really possible to know another's experience. Equanimity is not something that precludes action, but it stabilizes internally certain factors that allow for action to come from a place of balance. So there are realistic expectations within what it is that one thinks and says and does. There's a Tibetan model for this, and this is the doctor who receives all patients equally and attends equally to each with the same dedication to the potential well-being of each patient. And some are healed and some are not. So after all is that's possible is done, then those that are not are held in compassion. Ah, this karma is necessary for this person. It cannot be altered. I hold you in reverence and respect and support in your experience. And that's the equanimity piece, this balanced sense of being in relationship in a way that comes from balance and from, I want to say, a quality of intelligence that allows for all that is possible. Equanimity arises in our lives and allows for us to do that what can be done. I learned this in a couple of phases of life one time when my daughter was diagnosed with a brain tumor. It did no good for me to fall off the edge of the earth in anger and denial. I didn't want to project that kind of energy into this tender situation. Calling upon equanimity was not a negative statement. It was just to stabilize the capacity to be with things as they are. What she needed was my presence. Witnessing and advocating presence. She called me and said, please come because you are the one person who will be able to be present without being reactive. She didn't want my reactivity. She didn't want my fist pounding against the wall or chest saying, oh no, this couldn't be true. I don't want you to suffer. That would just add a new dimension of suffering. She wanted my witnessing presence. She needed someone with her who could just be there and who could be malleable, and who could be in awareness, and to help her to make wise choices. Well, I knew that I, separate from equanimity, would not be capable of this, but in equanimity, it was completely possible. So I went to be with her, even though my hand was shaking on the telephone as the diagnosis was confirmed. And I met her in a relatively calm state. And it could have been so incredibly disturbing for her if I just poured in my fear and grief. My fear is my karma to attend to stabilize, not to project. She wasn't afraid at that moment. She felt confident in her doctor. She was relieved to know why she was having certain experiences. She had a sense that there was going to be a positive outcome. Why would I want to disturb that? And then there were times throughout that process of the surgeries and the breakdown in the equipment and you know, all of the various things that happened in the drama of life and post-surgery, where she needed more support. Disorientation, confusion, just a new experience. I remember her opening her eyes and saying, "You have a huge canary on your shoulder." I said, "I do? What's its name?" "I don't know." And so it was just being with her in her experience, not wanting to take it away from her. Oh, you're here. Oh, where were you a moment ago? "I was here." Oh, not wanting to take away your experience. Why didn't you know that? Just that ability to be malleable with the experience. On and on over about 2 years. Not knowing, as we don't know, as we just don't know, the implications of anything, and in this case, the distinction between the short and long-term effects of this process that she was going through. And that she always went through with a certain quality of balance. Why would I want to disturb that balance? Perhaps that balance was there because there was the balance within me to support that. Perhaps. Perhaps if I live in balance that supports that possibility within any other being that I happen to have the honor of being present with. Perhaps. It's an experiment. Equanimity is also acceptance. As I mentioned with my mother, oh yes, life includes this too. I couldn't have possibly imagined this nightmare. But life includes this too. Not judging, accepting. Not falling away into the darkness of mind and projecting it. But trusting. It's said that each being is born with samskaras, which are deep impressions in the consciousness, in the brain, that are that which determine the perception of life. So that one person experiences the same thing, two people experience the same thing in a different way. One is pleasant and one is painful. that takes away the responsibility from me to assure that someone experienced something in a pleasant manner. And I have learned by having 5 children that there is this truth. There is this one person, 5 people experiencing the same person in a completely different way. This person, mother. Oh, you're such a good mother. You're so kind. Oh, you're such a bad mother. You know, just that kind of chorus. And it's all according to one's perception. And perception shifts and changes throughout life according to that which is causal. And we each have different inclinations. We each have different conditioning. And we also each have the capacity as human beings to work in objective consciousness and to transform our conditioning, to use our conditioning in a way that actually becomes the basis of liberation through mindfulness. Not all beings have this capacity, but it is latent. And one can look deeply into each being and know that it is latent. The Dhamma is present. It is within, around, the essence of all. Maybe this being doesn't have the capacity to hear of the Dhamma in this life, but in equanimity, one has the capacity to witness the Dhamma within any being. One of the things that I did in order to establish, I want to call right parenthood, was to begin to contemplate my children according to principles of Dhamma. To begin to look into the natural expressions, both that which was wholesome and that which is not, in each as I got to know them better. And to begin to perceive them, not, you know, in terms of my conditioning, but in terms of what was being revealed according to each nature. Very interesting. And to continuously remove through equanimity, I am the owner of my karma, you are the owner of yours, the wanting mind. And to learn that wanting is not the basis upon which one actually experiences love. And also to differentiate between fear and love, which is one of our greatest confusions, to be able to know the distinction between fear and presence of mind. And to trust the presence of mind, no matter what the attending feeling tones are within the heart, is love. So we're living in this vast experiment that we take on when we cultivate, and then in any given moment, rather than a conceptual broad sweep of life, you know, to just let each moment be a moment in which we experiment with equanimity. And what occurs as a result of that? What kind of clarification? What kind of wise discernment or ability to make distinctions amongst that which is arising occurs? That sense of path that exists in each moment. Intention provides purpose. Attention provides that sense of application, presence, purpose, and direction. The essence of path, presence, the degree of presence, wavers, but we can strengthen it. That sense of direction in terms of how we engage and apply this principle of cultivation. And direction in terms of then where we find ourselves in each moment with this increasing sense of path. Knowing when we're on the path and when we're not. And just making a slight adjustment. So equanimity is our friend and our guardian in this experimentation with life, as are each of the four Brahma Viharas, friends and guardians of certain aspects of our nature, and also the fulfillment of certain aspirations in the heart. Today is the opportunity to continue with what we wish, what we discern as the appropriate practice, each of us. And I really suggest that, if possible, you just choose one. You continue with the one that you have chosen. And actually, it's quite interesting because in the 4 o'clock group, I occasionally ask, okay, who's doing embodiment, mindfulness, awareness of breathing? And, you know, there'll be hands throughout this retreat. As well, okay, metta, karuna, mudita, upeka. And there's just been this wonderful sense, yes, the maturity of that capacity to be able to choose and to make a commitment to that which we choose and to follow through. That has so much to do with skill in life. Because none of these cultivations can come into any kind of maturity unless there's continuity of mindfulness. So the consideration is, what do you want to dedicate presence of mind to today on behalf of yourself and all beings? What do you want to cultivate through mindfulness on behalf of yourself and all beings today? I mean, one can't go wrong, but... And by the way, there's no punishment, you know, in not knowing exactly, but just making a choice. Oh dear, the choice. But just that sense of that which has the greatest vitality, that which seems to have the clearest intuitive calling, that which you're most interested in, that which aligns itself most deeply with the sense of where you need to develop more support, more mindfulness. Let it be a choice that you make for yourself and not others, although I think we know to some degree by now that others are implied in every choice we make, and in any wholesome choice we make, then there are wholesome implications in our connection with others, individuals and all beings. So just taking a moment to choose, perhaps to continue, perhaps to experiment, and then using that quality of intention and perseverance in fulfilling the choice that you make today, so as to give something the quality of attention and persevering intention and continuity of mindfulness so that it can further awaken. By going from flower to flower, we just realize, oh, I'm a buzzing bee. To be a true and steady, authentic being, we work with continuity. With one object. And continuing with your practice. not to disturb your practice, but to answer a question that you may have. My daughter is alive and vibrant and very deeply happy in her life and works in hospice and is looked towards as one who can help to understand how to work with others in bereavement.